outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is The God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. I want to welcome you back to The God Journey. This is part two of a conversation that Sarah and I began last Friday. If you haven't heard that, you might want to go back and pick it up. This is the continuing part of that. Our adventure over 45 years of being married and finding our way to us, finding our way to the life that God wanted us to share together, and how to love another human being as deeply as you can in the life that you've been given. And we're still on that journey. But here's more of the questions that we were asked and some of the answers Sarah and I came up with. I hope it's helpful to you. I think we've already talked about this, many believe that in order to decrease confusion and break stalemates in joint decision-making, there needs to be a leader in the relationship. And then it's always fallen to the guy, and guys have almost always used that as an excuse to abuse their woman or get their way or make the woman feel bad if they don't. And it goes on the other side, too. I know women who pout or withhold themselves to get the man to do what they want. Control is the worst thing that goes on in a marriage.
Yes.
If you don't want your partner to be freely involved, have the freedom to say no, have the freedom to say yes. And if you both aren't working toward that end, finding a way to say yes to each other, then your marriage is going to hurt. One of you is going to become the other person's abuser because one of you won't change. One of you won't open the door. One of you won't lay down your life for the other. So if the other one's always being the patient one, always laying down their life for you, you'll end up abusing them thinking you have a great life because you're getting your way. At the end of the day, you're not going to have the marriage that's going to fulfill you or the woman you say you love or the man you say you love. But I do think when there's a stalemate, if I've looked at anything in that Ephesians 5 scripture, it's I am responsible to make sure you and I keep working together toward a good end. So I do think I feel responsible for that. I think most of the time I don't have to do anything about it. I think you and I flow very well in a relationship. But if I sense that we're not, I don't mind being the one that instigates the conversation saying, can we talk? And I'm feeling like this isn't working well or this isn't working well for me. And it's not the leader in the sense of getting my way. It's the facilitator of the kind of dialogue that may help us break a stalemate. Because a stalemate's another way to control. If the no vote is controlling everything. But you and I have gotten through that by just making certain things. It takes two yeses. Like for me to travel, it takes two yeses.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, I feel strongly I'm going and you go along with it. It takes two yeses. And for you to come with me, takes two yeses. I don't get to say, hey, God told me you're coming on this trip. I don't get to say it, and I don't. Because if God is calling you to be on a trip, what I know is he needs to make that known to you. And if I trust him to be big enough to do that, then I don't have to manipulate that outcome.
Yeah.
I have said at times, I do feel like this might be a trip for you, so give it some thought. But when you come back and say, yeah, no, it's not, and you've been there are times when you've made that choice when I was thinking, oh my gosh, I really thought she was going on this one. It turned out to be you needed to be home for something that happened that if you hadn't been here, you would have had to fly home anyway.
Yeah.
And so I've learned to trust that. I've learned to trust that my wants are not God's wants. So we don't have a leader in that sense, the quote. Is sacrifice necessary in a marriage? Is self-sacrifice always required?
I don't know if it's always required.
That sounds painful, doesn't it?
I don't know if it's always required, but it does. There's times, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I would say if self-sacrifice means you're less than true to you, which doesn't mean I get everything I want.
So what is self-sacrificing then?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. If self-sacrifice is, hey, I'm giving up something because I love that person, and I'm doing it willfully, knowingly, unmanipulatedly, then yes, self-sacrifice will help relationships work. Everybody can't get everything they want in a relationship. But if self-sacrifice means I've got to be less than who God made me to be to get along with you, that relationship is doomed. Because you can't be less than yourself. Now, most of us, like you even talk about, we don't know who we are. We've grown up with insecurities we think defined us, coping mechanisms we think defined us. The only thing that makes us true to who we are, because like Jesus said, hey, you can't trust it. You're looking for the approval of the crowd. You're looking for all that kind of stuff. I know where I came from and where I'm going. So you can trust what I'm saying to you. And I think that's when we find ourselves inside God's love enough that I'm not operating out of my insecurities or coping mechanism, then the true self emerges. And the true self isn't selfish self. It's not I got to have my way, but it's also I'm not going to be less than who I am to get along with you.
True.
And you can't go, that's not self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice is, yeah, I would rather have had that for dinner tonight, but I'm willing to have that. Or I can't, you know, I'm willing to give up my life. But make sure that that's somewhat balanced, because I think if I'd have been clued in on that a little earlier, I would have realized I'm always getting what I want. And I thought, because you were being honest with me, I thought so. Like you said, you weren't being honest with yourself, so you weren't being dishonest with me in that sense. But I think now I'd look back and say, you know what? I think we need to talk a little bit. We finally going through some of that. We had these five things. I would look at you and say, is it one or five? One was if I'd ask you to do something or ask us about something. One is, I really want to do that. I'm in wholehearted. The other one was, it probably wouldn't be my first choice, but yeah, it'd be great. Two is absolutely new. I don't care. Can't. That doesn't matter. Three was, I'd rather not, but if you really want to. And then five was an absolute no. And I would just look at it and say, one to five. And you would, because I've never been difficult about letting you know what I want.
No.
I think it's been difficult always to pull out of you what it is that you want. And so we did that for a while. And that was a very helpful tool. You could just go. And I was willing to say, I'm not taking anything less than a one or two. So if you were saying you're a three or four, I'm going, yeah, then we're not doing it. And sometimes that means, yeah, some things get by us, but it helps you discover more who you are and come out of that into something different and wonderful and alive. Have you grappled with the tension between personal freedom and interconnectedness? Doing what you want versus doing what the couple wants. I think that's what it means. Like personal freedom, like gardening or golfing, versus spending time together, watching a movie. One of the things you love right now is you love me to read to you every night, and we keep running out of things to read. Although we found a pretty good book right now, we're enjoying reading together. But that's a nice piece. What is it? It's a manuscript. So. But it's a story I hope you get to read. No, I'm not rewriting this one. I'm just encouraging somebody, but it's a really, really good story, and hopefully you'll have it out soon. But you really enjoy just some time in the evening where I read to you. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Or we're traveling on a trip, I'll read in the car to you or whatever. You really enjoy that. I don't know that it would be my first thing to do, but I love reading something with you and talking about it at the end of it. I just read so much faster when I'm not having to vocalize the words. So it will be faster if I read it. But there's things like that. I think you and I have found a pretty good pace of that. And I don't think what we do is going to fit for any other couple. I think couples got to find the good pace in that. And the way you find it is, does it both seem to fit us? And if somebody's feeling left out, vocalize it. And the other partner, listen and go, what can I incorporate of that? But there's stuff we do together. There's some days I can, even during the quarantine here, I don't see you all day long. We're in the same home. We have lunch together or we have dinner together, but I don't know what you're doing. I'm up here in my study doing all kinds of stuff.
Having fun doing lots of little stuff.
Yeah.
I never will get bored.
You putter, you do all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah. Garden and birds and...
Fussing with the dogs.
Doing some cleaning.
Bathing them. Yeah. So it's not doing everything together. It's not that. But is there enough time? One of the things I think we do well is we watch a lot of stuff together, movies and things. We find stuff we both like. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, we like a lot of similar stuff. But I'll watch more of a romantic comedy kind of thing that you would enjoy, more of a Hallmark type movie than I would. But I'll watch them with you. And you watch some of the ruggeder stuff that you maybe wouldn't be your first choice. And you'll close your eyes a lot to get through it.
Yep. You just ask what's happening.
But neither one was like really violent, scary horror stuff. So that makes it easy. I mean, we have found a way to enjoy it. Because again, I would rather watch something with you that we both enjoy than sit in the bedroom and watch something by myself that you're not, you know, particularly with the travel I do when I'm home, I really want to be home with you. And even 2 months of quarantine, has it gotten too much for you? Are you still okay?
I'm okay.
You're excited about me traveling sometime soon? You don't want me to bring the COVID back home. How did you find quality time together with young children?
Well, at what age? Kids were young. You worked out of the house, so that's a little bit different.
I always had an office at home, but I had more office time when your kids were young. But we had a date night weekly, right?
Yeah.
And people say, you know, what would you do on your date nights? Sometimes it was a walk in the park or...
I don't know if we had so many regular bases when we got to Visalia, though.
Family night?
Yeah. Or well, we had family
date
nights.
Date nights? No, we had, I think we did when we were Saviors.
Yeah. We were good at, when we were up in Fresno.
Well, we didn't have kids when we were in Fresno.
We had Julie.
For 2 years with Julie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we continued that pretty much.
Our babysitter, we came home and she was still up.
We'd always take a trip away for our anniversary, spend 2 or 3 days together. Yeah. And often in that, well, we'd have fun together, but we'd also talk about how's the relationship going and, you know, what can we do different? What can we do better? We had those conversations. We read a lot of books together, and reading Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown was a big part of transition for you. We read a book called As for Me and My House about marriage by Walter Rangren. And one of the neat things we got out of that was, particularly being in ministry, one of the questions on here was, this is kind of a scary question, but how have you protected yourself from the temptation of unhealthy relational ties with other women in your travels? I think we got some practice with that when we were in ministry. One of the things we read in that Walter Rangren book was to trust the jealousy of your wife. Now, you've never been a jealous woman.
No.
For all that you've dealt with internally, you've never been threatened by other women, even hot chick walking by us at the beach. You'll go, well, that's disgusting because she's not wearing certain kinds of clothes. And you'd be drawing attention to it. And I'd be going, really? You want to do that with me? So you've never been threatened that way physically, which is, I think, awesome. But one of the things he said was, trust the jealousy of your wife. And we read that thing and I said, there are women in this church that make you nervous around me. And you said, yeah. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Identified three specific women. And I went, you know what? Those relationships are, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong in it. I don't think they were necessarily aiming for anything, but I do think they were a little more flirty out of bounds than was appropriate, and stuff could happen there, I guess. But I know when I travel, how do I avoid unhealthy relationships with women? First of all, I can't even think of a temptation I've had on the road. So I'm trying to go, okay, was there someone out there that I went, wow, that would be kind of fun if something happened? And no, I was an old Carl's Jr. commercial where the hot chick's eating the hamburger that's drooling down her face. And she goes, do you really want the same thing every night? And it was a double entendre about sex and saying, do you really need variety? And I was talking to a young couple not long ago. I've been married 6 months and they were talking about getting bored in the bedroom department. I'm like, really? I have found being with you exciting every day of the journey, even some of the changing painful bits. It's all been, it's a heck of a ride. And boredom has never entered into it. And I don't think of, I guess this is, geez, it's probably going to be dumb to say, and I'll probably cut it out after I say it. But I don't find sex to be a connection of two bodies. It's to me a connection of two lives. That's why it just seems absurd to even think of someone else being in that space that you and I share and have shared for 45 years. I just can't even imagine. I have great relationships with people I travel with. I stay in homes. I sometimes have more in common with the wife than I do the husband in terms of spiritual hunger or whatever. So the conversations may move more one way than another. But one of the things I have found that's helped, because I don't feel like I have anything invested in relationships when I travel. Like I get tempted, or I just don't think that's been true. But I think sometimes other women have come on to me. There's been kind of a flirting thing that I kind of go, I wonder what that's about. But one of the things I've done is almost every time I'm someplace new or even in a new home, I share a Sarah story. It's one of the first things I do. When I humanize you, I don't get that stuff from people. I just don't. I think it'd be true on the job. When you talk about your spouse, which a wife or your husband, you're talking about them and what they mean to you or something they shared with you that touched your life. Or I share the Zoe story in the garden, because that's a big Sarah story. And I think people tell me this, I love how you love your wife even when she's not here. And I go, cool, because I'm doing that intentionally. And I find that when that happened, I kind of stumbled on that by accident, but I noticed where that happened. Then there was none of that other kind of hinky stuff going on. It wasn't even the flirting thing. I never had a sister, so I enjoy funning with my sisters in the body of Christ. I do. I have lots of fun with various sisters and couples in the body. I do. I have fun. I'm playful about it. particularly young ones that have not had good father roles. I have lots of those kind of men and women in my life that I just get to be a safe man for them to be with. And I cherish that more than anything. I wouldn't trade being a safe person for a broken life for anything. And yet I know a lot of guys who do, because I meet those women who got close to a counselor slash pastor slash friend, and then that friend either came on to them or had sex with them or did whatever. So I know that that happens a ton.
Yeah, it does, unfortunately.
And it just breaks that life all the more. That's why I don't understand why guys do it. And if that's your temptation and that's your struggle, you got to get inside Jesus in a way that resolves that. Because that's what young men, young women need, are people to be safe with as God works out his stuff in them. And if you're not safe, then stay home. What vital daily routines do you do that help maintain and grow your connection with your partner?
What kind of connection?
Just what do we do daily? Do you have any daily routines that you think about with us? They've changed over the years. Certainly when we had kids, some of that was more difficult. Because now every lunch, every dinner I'm home, we're together.
Yep.
We're together now 2 walks a day. We go 2 miles a day. Not every day we walk together in the morning, but we walk together. There's times to talk about everything. We're together for every meal. But when we had kids, I think we were more intentional at times. But there was long stretches where I think that got away from us. Yeah?
Yeah.
And it's just, man, it's kids and it's work. And it's just, for me, it was meetings, night meetings at the congregation for various reasons. And it was just a lot of work. And you kind of chase it. I think we've always been good about waking up together, going to bed together, and being nice to each other, being gentle in the evening, saying goodnight to each other. I think those have helped. Reading to you has helped. We've almost, not always, but we've mostly had stretches in our life where we've been reading something, Bible, a book together, talking about it some. But I don't think we have any rituals right now that we are, than we read every night when I'm home, we read together.
Yeah.
Most nights. I don't know what would be other than that. Reading the Bible, praying together. We pray about things that are happening around us. Let me see what else we got here from folks that have been kind of jumping on us. And we're way over time. I think you probably know that. So guess what? I get to be on 2 podcasts. Isn't that special? 2 for the price of 1. Have you struggled with fear in your marriage? Fear of failing? Fear of falling out of love?
Oh, for 36 years.
Fear of failing in the relationship?
I think so. I think that's part of my old self that I didn't know. It was based a lot of it in fear.
Yeah, but you were afraid our marriage would have failed? Or you would have been a failure in the marriage?
That I was a failure in what I did.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think that didn't change.
I mean, it's consistent with what we've been through and what we've learned. I have never one day of my life feared, well, there was one day, feared that this might come unraveled. And that was a very unique situation. I was a long way away from here. But I've never had the fear that we wouldn't make it together.
My fear, maybe not that we wouldn't make it together, but I think for all those years, up until about 7 years ago, I think, there was a fear of and a sense of everything I did was wrong.
I remember you came back from a trip where I asked you to buy something at the store and you forgot it and came home. And that really, it wasn't like I made a mistake. It's I'm a failure as a wife for forgetting something.
I have a huge fear of getting in trouble.
Yeah, there were times when you would say, I feel like you yelling at me. And I'm like going, what? I'm just expressing, you know, frustration or whatever, but man, I wouldn't scold you or wouldn't, but yeah, that.
So I think, yeah, the fear was that it was not necessarily about the marriage, but there was, I lived with fear all those years that, of what I would do or what I had done.
Wow.
Wrong.
Yeah. See,
I still have it at times. It's hard to rewire your brain.
It takes a while. It
takes a very long time and a lot of work.
Years, yeah. And a lot of positive self-talk, eh? But yeah, you haven't feared it from my standpoint. Like, I would think you're a failure and walk out.
Well, I would fear that everybody would think I was a failure.
Really?
Yeah. Huge amount of fear.
Is it less today?
It is less.
Wow.
But I have to.
Makes me sad.
But it comes back very easily.
Makes me sad, sweetie.
Well, if I forget anything.
Because you've been the most amazing wife and every. And it doesn't mean you've been perfect. We both made mistakes in our friendship with each other, and hopefully we knew we'd do better. We've had those long conversations that last 3 or 4 frustrating days of not finding that thing that puts it behind us so we can go on. And it's not as easy in a marriage, particularly for someone to say, okay, I'll own it and say, I'm sorry, just to get over this. We've always been, now we've got to find an answer here. It may take us days, and we may be frustrated, maybe kind of quiet around here. We've had those long nights. That's one of the dumb things. We were, you know, never let anger go down on your ass. So don't go to sleep until you've resolved everything. And oh my gosh,
that's
we've been
possible.
Up 2 in the morning trying to get, because we just took that as a legalistic kind of a thing. And now, you know what? It's just, we look at each other and say, you know what? Let's take this up in the morning. I love you. This doesn't change my love for you. I think that's what you want people to know. But I'm really frustrated here. And I don't think I'm hearing an answer that gives me a way to go forward with you yet. But I've never lost hope that we wouldn't find that. And I've never wanted it to be my joy at your expense. I've never wanted it to be that. But I do want us to have some clarity so we don't trip over this mine again. But we have. We've tripped over a few mines 30, 40 times as we're learning to communicate. But they grow less frequent and less intense over time. And then it's just, okay, we got one of those again. That just makes my heart hurt that you've been so, I know we've talked about times where that fear has been there, but just that it's as pervasive as it has sounded for you.
It's just not in marriage, it was with everybody and everything.
Right. Wow. How do you learn to graciously manage the tensions that arise from your differences? People, person versus introvert. With great difficulty? Some of them.
Always great difficulty.
How do you mean that?
How do I mean?
Yeah.
It becomes very internalized for me and can literally be sick inside.
But the tension between our differences, that I'm an extrovert, you're an introvert.
Oh, that one? What tension differences?
Yeah, what did you mean other than that?
When we have challenges or we have differences.
Oh, yeah, that stuff hurts like heck.
Oh,
I'm glad I cleaned that up before I got out.
Oh.
No, I didn't think he was talking about that. I think, definitely when you and I are not in sync and we've got one of those conversations. Some of our differences there is I'm a very quick processor.
Not me.
Man, you ask me something, I can give you an answer. I ask you some things, and it's only in the last 10 years, I think, I've gotten comfortable with this. I can ask you a question that you literally can't answer for 2 days.
Or longer.
Yeah, you're going to need to process it, think through it. And I used to think, well, you're just afraid to tell me what you're thinking. And you're like, I don't really even know what I would say at this point.
Because my mind goes blank.
And I couldn't wrap my head around that because it just seemed like a diversion move. But yeah, I mean, I get it now. I think I get it. And I'm willing to say, okay, you need a few days to process that. Let me know when you need more input, whatever. We'll keep talking. Because I'm never interested in you surrendering. I'm interested in us finding us. What's you, what's me? But yeah, I think this was more, I mean, that processing has been very frustrating. The fact that I'm so quick and can overtalk you and did much in our younger days, hopefully much less now. Because I'm into something, I think about things while I'm talking about them. You need to think about them beneath layers and layers of stuff before you can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it makes, you know, having an argument, it takes a while. Because I'm like, I want to fix it now. And you're going, I can't fix that now. We can be nice to each other now. We can get past the emotion of it. But we can't get to a resolution until you're free to talk about it.
And even when I talk about it, whatever, because if I'm going to bring up something and I'm going to talk about it, I think of several different ways your response And what I would say, back and forth. And it never happens like that. And so it just always throws me.
I don't respond the way
that I think you're
I do in your head.
Yeah.
So I throw a curveball at you.
I create lots of scenarios and never happens. And then I'm at loss.
It feels bad too. I feel bad. Oh, no. Yeah, but I was thinking this more like, how do you negotiate the differences between, like, you're a detail management kind of person, and I'm more of a creative, flying by the seat of my pants. I used to be pretty good at managing stuff back in the day, but I've kind of, I'm much more of a creative, want to fly by the seat of my pants, see what God's opening in the next opportunity rather than plotting my whole life out very far. I used to couldn't even go on vacation without kind of having a pretty good schedule every day what we were doing.
Yeah.
Now I don't even think that way just about life. But
except for what you're going to eat.
What you're going to eat? It's the best part of the day. Why not?
Okay. What are we going to have for supper?
Does that bother you in some way?
No. It's just, what are you going to have for supper?
Do you,
or where we're going to stop to eat.
Do you not like the question?
Well, we...
Oh, for driving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And then when I stop, I know what I'm going to order. Some people in our family will stare at a menu.
Of course.
Even though we're going to Burger King for the 450th time. And our children sit there and look at things. I'm going, you knew for an hour we were going to stop here.
We have differences in what we want. It's not like just like
what we want. It's even making a decision.
That's
oh,
okay.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, I do enjoy knowing. And part of that's kind of the diet thing I live on. It's kind of, I want to manage my intake. So what I have for dinner affects how much I have for lunch, which affected how I had breakfast when I used to have breakfast. Now I don't. So part of it's that. I just need to know. So I don't think about it anymore. And plus, lo and behold, so you're a vegetable girl. I'm a meat guy. So I've got to thaw something out. I got to know in the morning we're going to have something that needs to be thawed out in the freezer. So that's part of it. But yeah, I do like that. I think we've gotten good at your introvertedness, my extrovertedness, and making room for that, right? You get to go when you want to go. You don't have to go when you don't want to go. If we're having too many people around for a while, we take some space and don't have people around for a while. I think we've gotten good at realizing you have a very different makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that works, because I can, on the other side of that, and this is, I think, what people miss, the reason why God often puts people together who are different. If I had my way about everything, I think I would be too busy and worn out all the time. I think you're calling us back with your introverted stuff. I think that helps me. When we find us, I think I have a better pace than if I just did it on my own. I don't think I'd have as healthy a pace. How have we negotiated that, though, is probably another question. Because it's, I mean, we're 45 years now of living in the peace of that. But getting here, we've had our moments, man, of mm-hmm. just, I want to do this. Well, I can't take any more. And why can't you? And I've had more of an appreciation for the differences of human makeup than I think. Because the old Bible teacher days in me is, well, here's the truth of it. You just teach it. Everybody does it. So if we all were following the same truths, we would all live the same way. And I just realized how absurd that seems now. We're all different people with different makeups and different gifts we're negotiating, as well as different weaknesses and insecurities we're negotiating. And so you just have to learn. I think all of this, there's less of a, okay, here's the three things to ask your partner that will help you negotiate your differences, as you've got to love the person you're married. And when you love them, when you, and not just, oh, I love you because I said I did. I think it's so funny what we meant when we said we loved each other 45 years ago. Right?
Yeah.
And what we mean when we say it now.
Yeah.
Back then it was, oh man, I just love Sarah. She's just great. She makes me feel things, make my heart go flutter, flutter. And she's a great cook and she's this and she's that. And it was all the selfish reasons for loving you. And now I'm learning to love you. The broken parts of you, the gifted parts of you, I love you. And I'm willing to be invested in your journey as much as I am in mine. So I'm willing to lay down my life, or I'm willing to learn to love Sarah the way God wants Sarah loved today. That's I'm interested in learning that. I don't do it well all the time, but I think I got a better platform to do it than I've ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm improving
mm-hmm.
in that. Because I think you are in making your stuff known sooner. Getting much better at that. You may still feel like you have a long ways to go.
Yes, I do.
But that whole thing has made this, the card we started with, has made this whole thing an adventure. It's been an amazing journey to this place where we are. And that's how we look at it. Yeah, it's been painful bits. Yes, sometimes for days, weeks at a time. But most of it and the whole of it has been, you get to be more the Sarah God created. I get to be the more Wayne God created. We get to benefit from the gifts of each other. And I am never more relaxed than I am in your presence. Even stuff that might be embarrassing if it was in public, I could be with you and be relaxed and at rest and don't feel like I have to perform for you. But I want to be the man that most encourages your journey. I do want to be that guy. But there's a restfulness about it now, that the fruit of 45 years. Like I said, this could just be all the prologue still. We could have another place we go through that even pulls back the curtain a little more and that allows each other to love more deeply. But it's been a joy, these 45. I'm sorry we're not in Europe together. Spending some time, but we are together, so there you go. And we'll walk the dogs again today, and we'll see what God has next for us. That's been a joy, sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for doing this. I want to remind our people who are listening, don't write Sarah an email and ask her what she thinks about X, Y, or Z. If you want to write that to me, write it to me. And want me to sign Sarah's name on it when I... No, I won't. I won't. I'll let you know it's coming from me, but... And we won't be having an after show with Sarah in it, because that's even another microphone, and then with a video camera, so that's even, yeah, worse. Yeah, I wish this had been a video, man, because your eyes are great. It just watch. I'm not doing that. You really enjoy the life God has given you. The simplicity of me, your kids, your grandkids, your dogs, your gardens, the friends you have that you're close to. And I mean, you, it's not just you stick with this little circle of friends. I mean, you've got a new physical trainer, even though you haven't seen her since she had surgery before the quarantine and now the quarantine, but you become friends with the people who enter your life.
Yep.
So you have a new, you have an expanding group of friendships, people I don't even know because I've never met your physical trainer.
Yeah, my personal trainer, my physical therapist.
Your therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. Because people hear that and think, oh, well, Sarah doesn't like people. You like people. You love people. And the people you love deeply. And you're making cookies for your physical trainer, which I'm okay with because I get the cookie dough. So I'm really okay with that.
And my physical therapist, I've always told her, she gave me my life to be able to walk again.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yep.
After your surgery on your knee and your hip. And so it's not that. And when you have traveled with me, and I always say whenever I've gone anywhere in the world, I think after we leave, people would rather have Sarah back than Wayne. I think people, because I hear it all the time, people are endeared to you. You are a sweet, sweet person with a ton of wisdom and just conscientiousness. You don't, you're like my dad in that you don't talk a lot in group, but when you say something, it carries weight, partly because it's rare. And partly because you have some incredible wisdom that God has shown you, and some of the stories we've shared of the garden and the dogs and what you're willing to think about and do. I mean, you really, really love your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about you. And I love that I get to share it. And I love that somehow across that banquet table 48 years ago, you caught my eye enough to invite you out a few weeks later and that a relationship started in college that culminated in marriage, and it still culminates in you and I learning how to love each other.
But I'm an extreme introvert, so that's...
But you're comfortable with it.
Absolutely.
You used to feel bad about it. Or you used to feel like it was a weakness, right?
Oh, it was not a weakness, maybe, but...
All that teaching about home groups, hospitality, though, it does, I think, weigh on introverts. They feel like, oh, well, we're not...
It's horrible.
Yeah, it is.
It's and probably introverts are the people that are probably doing better in this time of the pandemic because they're okay.
Yeah, they probably are okay.
Because you're okay by yourself.
Unless the husbands are mean to them while they're the wives.
I'm perfectly comfortable being by myself.
You're kind of okay in this pandemic.
Like I said, I'll never find anything bored. There's always more things to do.
I don't find myself bored either. I do miss dinner with some of our friends. I do miss hugging a grandkid.
Yes, I do.
It's been a couple months since we've been able to do that. And I miss hugging my kids. My son bought a house, and we'd love to move out. We'd love to fly out there and see him and his girlfriend. But
not getting on a plane.
Yeah, we're not doing that right now. And that part's been the hard part. We haven't lost our jobs, so people who have or people who've lost close loved ones, my heart goes out to you. This is a tough, insidious disease that's kind of rewriting the economy of the world, and somehow God's going to have to show his glory in that too, which he does well. But
yes.
I love that you're coming so much at rest in yourself and so much rest in the God who loves you. Even what you wrote in my card, which I'm not reading to anybody, but it just touches me that the way love is what God, I hope, designed it to be, that when you really love another person over a long period of time, and not just live together and make the most of it, but really learn to love, make adjustments, shape, let God do a deeper work of healing. When you learn to love another person up close, it changes you more than anything else. And then now, 45 years into it, you and I, we get the reward of that. All the hard work. So some of you have been married 20 years or 10 years or 8 years. Do the work. You'll enjoy it most in your more senior years if you're at rest in the one you love and if you care for each other's needs and if you celebrate God together in a way that allows each day to become a continuing part of the adventure of love. Love you, sweetheart.
Love you, too.
And thank you for doing this. I won't ask you again, but if you ever want to, you can ask me. She's shaking her head, no. Anyway, 2 podcasts out of it, though. That's not bad. This is your 11th and 12th podcast, by the way. So.
I'm final.
12's a good round number to quit on. It's a good number to retire on. So just doesn't seem fair, though, that I get you every day of your life. I get to be with Sarah. I know other people say, oh, I want to be with Sarah too. But me, I get to. I'm really, really grateful that you would have taken the time and the risk to come do this with me.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.